Welcome to Psych Tech on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. We're a psychology and technology show. My name is Josue Cardona with Kelly Dunlap.
Heidi ho, Neighborino.
Kelly, let's talk about YouTube.
Okay, let's do it.
YouTube, for the first time, I don't know what possessed them to do this. This week they announced, or very recently, they shared some data with us. YouTube is kind of shady. There's a lot of things that we don't know like how it works and what they're doing. And they're always changing things. But they recently reported that in the last quarter of 2017, 8.28 million videos were taken down for, depending on how you look at it, like policy violations or violating their content guidelines, which are, if you try to Google search for YouTube content guidelines, those are kind of clear. But the fact is that you see all sorts of videos violating those guidelines all the time. And it seems kind of subjective. But anyway, so they shared this report, 8.28 million videos taken down in just the fourth quarter of 2017. And there are two big takeaways about that news that I'd like to talk about. One of them is that 80% of those videos were initially flagged by AI. They have a machine learning program going on, looking at every video, and 80% of the 8.28 million were flagged by AI. The other 20% were flagged by users. So like just people watching YouTube and then they saw something like, whoa, that's not okay, and flagged it. And then the other takeaway is that once a video is flagged, then usually a human person who is an employee of YouTube watches these videos to then decide whether or not they need to actually be gotten rid of. And the crazy thing is that of those 8.28 million videos, we don't know how many of them are what the Verge article I found called them disturbing, right? Disturbing videos. So some of these might just be copyright violations and things like that, but a lot of these videos are just horrible things like violent acts or things that are sexually inappropriate or just a bunch of other things, just disturbing. And so people are watching these, and the news that kind of came out around this is that YouTube knows that a lot of these videos are disturbing, and so they're limiting their contractors to only 4 hours of disturbing videos per day instead of whatever, however many they could before. Since they're contractors, I don't know if they had like a set limit. I don't know if they could work 16-hour days if they wanted. I have no idea. But those two things really stood out to me, and I'm looking forward to talking about them with you.
So I've got a lot of feels on this topic as somebody who's had videos taken down wrongly, as someone who's had videos taken down for right reasons. No disturbing content, just...
How many disturbing videos have you published?
None. But I have had things flagged, not always through YouTube, but with other platforms that use the similar kind of algorithm. So, you know, I understand that you don't want to have a false positive, like you don't want to flag something that is not offensive, but you also don't want to miss something that is. So I get that. So I appreciate that they're at least doing something. I feel like the broadcasting is probably more in response to the recent issues with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and all the problems surrounding these mega platforms, especially dealing with social media and the lack of transparency around them. So I think maybe they're trying to do something in good faith to say, hey, you know, we're the good guys. We're doing good stuff here.
And to be clear, according to what I read in the New York Times, they are required to get rid of videos that would be considered disturbing. I don't know the exact criteria, right? Because apparently, so the government has found like, yeah, you're not responsible, Facebook, YouTube, you're not responsible for someone else putting something horrible on there, but you need to be taking care of that. You can't just be exposing people to disturbing content. That's my understanding.
Yeah, these platforms are not responsible. Like, you can't control what your users are doing per se, but if you do not take action to resolve any legal issues, then you are liable for that.
Yeah.
Is kind of how they're operating. And So, I mean, for example, some of this flagged content, I had taken this really cute video of my son who was eating cookie dough during Christmas while there was Christmas music playing in the background, and it got taken down because of copyright violation because of the Christmas music playing in the background. And I was like, oh, that's dumb. So, you know, those kinds of things, I'm sure an AI, tagged it, and maybe a human saw it and was like, yeah, you can't have We Wish You a Merry Christmas playing in the background or whatever. Unfortunately, I feel like a lot of the content that they're seeing does fall into the less copyright infringement and more disturbing zone. Otherwise, I don't think they would be limiting their moderators to 4 hours, which to me still seems like an obscene amount of time, especially because they emphasized that the people working in these capacities tend to be part-time employees or contractors, meaning that they don't have health care or other kinds of benefits that a full-time employee would have. And the New York Times article also mentioned like the lack of access to mental health care, or I think it even brought up that, you know, sometimes the moderators don't even know what they're getting into. They don't even know the kind of content that they're at risk of seeing. And so that kind of lack of informed consent plus lack of access to supportive mental health care is, I mean, I feel like it's a job that's intentionally traumatizing people. And it's really horrible.
A few years ago, I applied for a job at TED, the TED conferences company.
Yeah.
And they had a content reviewer position. And the job was to watch all of the TEDx conferences, right? Like they have a team of people who watch every single TEDx presentation and then choose the ones that are really good. Because apparently a TEDx goes on every single day around the world. So there are a lot of videos. They have just an absurd amount of videos on those channels. And only like the best presentations from the TEDx get like put on the regular TED channel, things like that. I wanted to sign up for that because that sounds cool. Signing up to watch disturbing videos all day does not sound like a lot of fun. That does not sound good. And I guess the idea of someone having a job that like has adverse mental health effects as a consequence of the job, I get that. Like, you know what you're signing up for if you are a firefighter or you're a cop or you work at a hospital.
Or you're a psychologist.
Or you're a therapist. But reviewing videos on YouTube requires, like, this is like a larger like labor conversation that I'm not trying to have right now. But just the thought of like, well, you know, maybe we should give all these reviewers, you know, access to mental health care because they're watching just the most messed up stuff and they're not going to be okay at the end of the day. We need to do something about it. Or we know that it's happening, so let's do something about it. And that is just limiting their access to messed up stuff. Like, I don't know.
It's a terrible situation because you don't want that content available. You don't want that to spread around. You don't want horrible things to crop up. And machine learning is not perfect. And so, you know, that human element is still required. I mean, it's like the CAPTCHA of YouTube. You know, you need to be able to parse out things that AI and machines can't do yet. But it's also like just the toll. And I think one of the things that bothers me the most is that from the videos I've seen and the articles I've read, the people who take these jobs tend to be in vulnerable positions. They're often contracted out through other countries who pay, you know, definitely not even the minimum wage in the U.S. and you're just like minimal money. They don't have benefits. They don't have support. They don't have access to care. A lot of times they aren't even told about the nature of what they're going to be watching. A lot of the people who are signing up for this just need a job. Like they need income to feed their families. And that just breaks my heart. It's like preying upon the vulnerable. And in psychology, we even have an ethics guideline that you can't offer reimbursement for a research study that would be coercive. So like, hey, $5 to come take this survey, that's fine. But here's $1,000 to take this survey. You know, you're kind of coercing people. You have the potential to coerce people into participation because they need the money, or rather the most vulnerable people will be more likely to engage with it. And that's kind of what I feel like this is. And You know, these people have no... One, this article is just coming up now in 2018. But yesterday, actually, the day before we recorded this podcast, was YouTube's 15th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So, like, how long have people been looking at this horrific content without support, without access to mental health services, you know, being, vicariously traumatized? I mean, how many times has someone... one of these people seen a beheading or child pornography or, you know, sexual assault? It makes me nauseous to think about.
Now, on the other hand, they're doing a good service, right? Because if these things aren't flagged, then how many people get to see that before it's taken down? Which is, I'll put a link to the New York Times article, which has a lot of numbers, a lot of percentages, a lot of things, but there's a certain number of those videos that were watched by people. Like, you don't know who that one person or those 10 people were who saw that. Like you said, let's use a beheading, for example, right? There's like, what, that's messed up. Like, but the video's title was Cute Puppies.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
That's
right?
Even worse. Just when you think it can't get worse, then then it gets worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a really good friend of mine who is a video editor, and she used to work in a newsroom. And I remember her talking to me about having to put together this video package of beheadings in the Middle East. And she couldn't even count how many times she had to watch and rewatch and watch again, you know, this several, many people and over and over and over again, be murdered, or and other disturbing things as well. And so I guess, as far as I know, her job didn't offer mental health support either, even though, you know, it's specifically a news industry, and her beat was specifically about, you know, foreign events and things like that. You would think that would be something that would be a priority, especially for a position like video editor. You know, I don't know if anyone listening has ever edited a video, but you see the same frame about 1,000 times. Because if you have to go through and put in motion graphics and edit for sound and things like that, I talked to her about it, and it was horrific. And I told her that this is horrific and it's not right. And thankfully, she has an awesome new job now, and she's doing really, really great. But there was definitely a psychological toll. And it sucked. And yeah, she was doing it in the service for a greater good, you know, for a mainstream news outlet, you know, letting people know what's going on and, you know, bringing high profile perspective to an important issue. But, you know, I have a really hard time because these people are humans, and no one should be exposed to the kind of crap that these moderators are exposed to. And I don't care if it's 4 hours a day or, you know, if that's the, like, I would love to know how they got to that number. Like, it's okay to watch horrific, real world violence for 4 hours every day. That's totally fine, but not 4 hours in 1 minute, because then bad things happen, because we know the brain doesn't work like that. And I find it really upsetting. So I know the article is supposed to be like, hurrah, look what we're doing. But it just deeply, deeply upsets me.
Well, I think that YouTube's statement is that way. I don't think that the coverage of it has been that way.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because the coverage has been more like, just in case you were wondering how messed up YouTube could be, or is, or look at these people. Like, look at the what they're going through.
And not just YouTube, but Facebook and Twitter and any platform where you can share content.
Yeah. And so a lot of the discussion for the past year has been about information that is not true, or conspiracy theorists, or things that are inciting people to violence, right? So is like hate speech, right? Like, how do that's a lot harder than graphic depictions of violence. And I don't know, like the AI thing is interesting, because how do you teach an AI to know that violent act wasn't in a movie and was actually for real? Because
this is
like a whole other piece of it, but like, oh, if it's in a movie, then it's okay. Like, then we can leave it there and people can watch it. But if it's real life, then then it violates our guidelines and we need to take it down. This is complicated. This is really complicated. and how they're training things to, I mean, like, I think, you know, you program it to be more safe than sorry. So initially, like, if it's a movie that's flagged and you can't really identify the movie itself as, because, you know, the way this happens is that it's cataloged, right? So it's like, oh, we recognize that scene from this movie, so we're not going to take it down. We actually flag it as that. And anybody, something that YouTube does is that depending on the copyright holder or how they want to handle it, like you said, there was a Christmas song, right, on a video, yeah, that you posted. So the copyright holder can choose to simply have every single time that anybody uses that song in a video automatically be monetized for them. So every time that somebody watches your video, if it gets any money, that money, instead of going to you, it goes to them. Copyright holders have that option. I believe that's how it works. I'm almost certain. And the same thing happens with videos. I can put up a scene from a movie, and if Warner Brothers is like, no problem, like, but it's going to be flagged as mine. It can be on your channel, but I'm going to get the money for it. And that stuff doesn't work perfectly, but I'm just bringing up that example to show like how sophisticated some of that stuff is. But then what if you're recreating a scene from a movie, but then like hurting somebody in the process? Like it gets so complicated. And I think I can't imagine how hard it must be to get that software to where it is. Like maybe they waited 15 years to talk about that because up until now it wasn't that good. Because 8.28 million in the last quarter of 2017, we have nothing to compare that to.
Right, right. They haven't shared any data previously.
Yeah. And so we don't know what happened the quarter before or 10 years before or the quarter since. We've seen data on how many videos are uploaded. We've seen data on how many views there are. But we've never seen anything like this.
About the moderation.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I don't know. On the one hand, 8.28 million sounds like a very large number over the course of 3 months. But like in the grand scheme of YouTube, it doesn't seem
right
that big.
Yeah, in context, it doesn't seem. I couldn't find the upload numbers for the quarter that they were talking about. I'm sure they're up there. I wasn't able to pull them because I wanted to figure out what percent, you know, were pulled down. And obviously the numbers would be approximations. But yeah, my feeling is that it's probably less than 10%.
Yeah.
Which, okay, some faith restored in humanity, you know, less than 10% of the content that is uploaded by anybody anywhere is horrific. Okay, so that's 90% positive. But something else that I found really interesting is just the secrecy around content moderation. And I kind of got my first experience with that when I was doing moderation in my my esports forum, and I also had some back and forth with Xbox Live enforcement, and those are the people who like ban your account if you cheat or if you're slinging hate speech or whatever, and like it's super secretive, you know. People who work in that area tend to, I mean, it's almost like clandestine. For Xbox in particular, that part is specifically because of safety concerns. You know, you don't necessarily want death threats coming at your team all the time. So by not being public about it, you know, that might be a concern that's going on in some of these companies' heads, or maybe how it started that, you know, if your post is rejected, you don't want the person who's trying to upload it to be able to target anybody in particular. However, I don't really think that's the case anymore, and that this kind of conversation needs to be out in the open. And again, I think I have a really tough time knowing what people know and what they don't, because I did content moderation for like 10 years, and it wasn't YouTube, but I definitely saw some horrific, horrible, terrible things in my time. It's just a fraction of the scale. In my 10 years, I probably saw as much as what, half a shift for one of the people working YouTube moderation. And then like it sticks with you.
But a lot of that is subjective too. So like you had a very specific type of forum and you set many of the guidelines for what was okay and not okay, right? There are forums that are like for white supremacy or for whatever race supremacy or for whatever, like, built to bash another group of people, or And so those guidelines then are completely different, because then you're talking about, well, these words are allowed, these images are allowed, this type of hate speech is okay, inciting violence is okay to certain groups and not other groups. Like, how do you, as a company as large as like YouTube and Facebook, they are so large that I think it's hard for people to like understand. And like, Facebook has 2 billion users. That is a very large percentage of the population of the world. That's a lot of people. And so how do you set guidelines that apply to everybody? How do you set that standard? And I think one of the reasons why they're so secretive is that those lines are constantly moving back and forth. You know, it's like, I don't know, like, maybe, I mean, we're about the same age. Do you remember kind of when you heard like the word, I don't know, like shit on TV for the first time?
Yeah.
And it was like, it was some sort of change that happened in the government, right? Where like you were allowed to say the word shit like a certain number of times after a certain time, hour. It was like the weirdest thing. It was like I don't know how that works. Like, I don't know why all of a sudden that was okay and it wasn't okay before. And like completely arbitrary rules, right? And they depend on so many different things. And within, like, there are things, I don't know, there's like new trends, for example, right? Like, I don't know, I'm making this up, but like the ALS challenge, right? It's like, oh, everybody's throwing buckets of ice over their heads, right? And then one day it's like, oh, now it's buckets of blood or feces or something like that. Like, okay, so now we're cutting the line, even if we call it an ALS bucket challenge. Like, it's a stupid example, but it's the type of thing where like things are constantly changing and these companies are being blindsided constantly by new things in different cultures too. Like, if you look at in different parts of the world, there are things that are allowed, and just like there are things that are allowed here in the US that aren't okay in other countries, and you have to change that according to the country too. It's a lot of stuff. It's got to be really complicated.
Something else to keep in mind, you know, again, as I compare it against my experience, is that, you know, my website, we just did it for fun. I wasn't trying to make a profit. If I banned people and they got mad and they left, it was no big deal. That is not the case for these mega platforms. You know, people are their currency and they don't want to alienate their customers, because that's their revenue. That's their product that they're selling to advertisers. And so you want people to stay on Facebook. And, you know, I think it's easier to let things slide when you can justify it as, oh, well, you know, it doesn't hurt. We don't want it to hurt the bottom line. And I think it was the New York Times article that also mentioned that even though these companies have set out these kinds of guidelines, that they are completely open to changing them in order to pursue their capitalistic gains. And specifically, I think Turkey was the example that, I think it was Facebook or YouTube, in order for them to exist in Turkey, they had to censor any negative comments about the government, the Turkish government, on their platform. And they did it. And it's like, to me, that is such an ethical, crappy decision. Like, you're intentionally censoring and being party to, you know, a state regime that is trying to oppress its people. Also, you can just exist in that country and make more money. And I think that's maybe another reason that it just feels so essentially nefarious is, you know, not only are, you know, the important people in these companies making so much money, but then they also, like, at the other end, you have employees that are working, you know, part-time and being exposed to horrific trauma. And it just reminds me so much of, I think the movie was Elysium with Matt Damon, where all the poor people lived on Earth and all the rich people lived in this halo-shaped ring in outer space. And that's the thing that had the pod where you could just like lay in it and get healed of all your cancer. Mm-hmm. And that is totally the vibe I get from this, where the, you know, the rich get richer and then they stay wealthy and they just grow and they, you know, they expand and they do what companies in a capitalist society do. They try to get more money. Meanwhile, the people who are doing the good work, you know, making sure that child pornography is not circulated around the internet, are ones who are suffering and have so little support.
You lost me for a second here. Like, so you're talking you've gone back to talking about the reviewers then that are being paid like nothing, no money.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that just kind of like punctuates the disparity between the haves and the have nots, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Okay.
There's a new documentary that was shown at, I think it was Cannes earlier this year. It's called The Cleaners. And I wish that it was available now because it would totally be great to talk about in this conversation. So maybe we'll have a part two after this documentary comes out. But it basically tracks the experience of five content moderators, I think, who are living in the Philippines, but work for YouTube and Facebook and Google and do exactly this work. And it follows their experiences. And yeah, I wish that was available now because I feel like that might be informing kind of where I'm coming from in terms of, you know, the rich and powerful versus the little person just trying to survive.
So they've hired, apparently in this year, they said they were going to have 10,000 people doing this type of work. This was YouTube. And I believe Facebook said the same thing a couple years back, right? Also 10,000 people. That's the number that they chose. I don't know. Man, see, like, there's something called the Amazon Turk?
Oh, Mechanical Turk.
Mechanical Turk, right? Where you basically, like, you sign up and then you're like, okay, for a quarter, I'll watch a video, right? And then flag it or not flag it, right? Like, I feel like something like that might be a way of, because I'm sure that a lot of people would still want to do it if, like, presented with a certain number of options. It's like, oh yeah, like I'll review YouTube videos, but then like to kind of spread it out more so it isn't so. Like, again, like 4 hours is a concentrated number of disturbing videos. Now, disturbing is subjective. Like, that's really hard. Like, you could be on there for a year and never see anything horrific that was, like, going to affect you very badly. But that depends on who you are and what was in your queue. So I don't know how you navigate this. I don't know if you, like, to your point of disparity, you could, I don't know that paying people more necessarily solves the problem, but giving access to mental health care, I mean, that depends on what country you are in too. I guess, like, if you're in a country that has universal health care, that's not an issue, right? Or if you have another job, that's not really an issue because it's covered in your insurance. But somehow spreading it out, or maybe just hiring more people and... Ugh, I was about to say, like, well, and then you do different types of moderation. Like, you do, you watch the videos and you moderate the comment sections. But then that's like, that's just as horrible or maybe worse. Like, I think this speaks more to, like, this idea of people in other countries being paid less than minimum wage in the United States to do a horrible job is nothing new. Like, this is you sitting, I don't know, compared to other things, like sitting at your desk watching messed up stuff probably isn't the worst option that you may have. But I think this speaks a lot to the 80% of things flagged by the AI thing, where it's like, we can't rely entirely on that either. And I don't know if it'll ever get to a point where it's that good. I would hope so. More so for the benefit of these people who have to watch this or who are, you know, who are doing this as a job than for the quality of YouTube itself. It's like, I don't know, it's a fascinating back and forth. And what is, again, going back to the idea, like, what is disturbing? This is so subjective. One of the issues right now that Facebook is dealing with is, well, how do you, what happens if somebody is posting lies or if somebody is inciting, like, you know, within politics right now, or someone has a conspiracy theory show, and like, and you can prove that, like, none of that stuff is true, but you have to, you kind of have to let it go, like, because, or do you, or don't you? And then, like, I don't know, these are really complicated conversations that this line, right, of what is allowed and what isn't allowed is going to continue to change, and it changes every single day. And with YouTube in particular, one of the biggest problems that they've had is, let's use the Logan Paul video, for example. Mm-hmm. So this guy is a super popular YouTuber, and then he obviously violates the content guidelines, and yet there seem to be some sort of exemptions in place within the algorithms, or they just, or he was lucky enough to be one of the ones that slipped through the cracks. And the video ends up being promoted on the front page of YouTube and getting, I don't remember how many views. I'm sure it was over 1 million before people started, you know, complaining. But at the same time, of those people, like, how many are complaining? How many thought it was okay? How many liked it? How many disliked it? It's complicated. Like, I would hate to have the job of deciding these things, because, like look at Apple, for example. They've said, we don't want any porn apps on our app store. That's like, that's our policy. It's not going to happen. But YouTube and Facebook are more like, well, what is porn really?
And honestly, that, at least in my limited experience, that has been like the most critical thing to establishing a community where that kind of crappy content is less likely to happen. Like, if there is a very strong and consistent message about what is okay and what is not, that helped tremendously in curbing the kind of toxic crap that emerged. Because originally the site that I ran, just for some context, used to belong to somebody else. A different company had them. And the company decided they didn't want to do Griftball anymore and handed, basically like said, here you go, you could have the community. And our my personal standards, which informed the site standards, were much stricter than the previous host. And so there was a really tough period of transition where users basically had to figure out what was okay and what wasn't. And it was incredibly stressful, and it was a very difficult time. And moderation is never easy, even when things are going well. And because there are all of these ethical gray areas and things like that, it's never an easy job. But like having that very clear cut, this is like having some kind of line is super helpful, even if you still have to take things on a case by case basis, because most of the time you do have to take them case by case. Or, you know, I think one of the examples was there was a piece of art that was done that depicted a caricature of Donald Trump with a tiny penis. And that was flagged by an AI as being like sexual content and inappropriate. But I don't think anybody would flag a picture of, let's say, Michelangelo, as in the statue, which also has a, you know, full frontal male nudity. Nobody would think of that as something that needs to be censored. So there are these really interesting questions around like, what is censorship? What is permitted? What is not? But I think it starts, like the answer starts with having defined morals. And ethics, you know, Apple says no porn. You know, that is entirely their decision. And based on their ethics, you might not agree with where their ethics are or where they come from, but at least you kind of know where that bar is, as opposed to something like Facebook or YouTube, who like, okay, yeah, you know, no censorship. Everybody should be free to say what they want to say. And, oh, never mind, we want to be in Turkey, so we're going to completely limit this kind of conversation in that space. So, you know, that, I think that's part of the issue. And I know one thing that I would like to see happen is for, I think you said it earlier, like take the better safe than sorry approach. I would love to see Facebook and YouTube and the rest take a more, stricter approach. So for example, I took a picture of my dog wrestling with another dog because it was really cute and they were barking and it was adorable.
Sounds violent.
Yeah. And I uploaded it to Tumblr, and I instantly got an email back saying, Tumblr does not allow sexual content on its website. And I was like, what? And I'm like, I went to check, you know, like, did one dog hump the other maybe? I don't know. And no, they were just wrestling. There was nothing happened. And so I reached out to them and said, hey, you know, I know that there's a strike rule on Tumblr and that if you have so many videos flagged for inappropriate content that you can lose your account. And I want some clarification because this is literally a video of my two dogs playing. Can you please? And then someone got back to me and they're like, okay, yeah, you're fine. You're good. Cleared it. And then it went up. Personally, I would rather do that 1,000 times over than have, you know, one horrific thing pop up, either publicly or I am curious about whether that would reduce the amount of horrible crap that that people would have to see in the moderator position, just because there becomes some kind of accountability on the uploader. Like, you can't just upload and go. You have to upload, and then it gets flagged by some kind of AI that's pretty stringent, pretty strict. And then you have to request, you know, you as that person, as the content creator or uploader, have to request permission to have that go live. So I don't, again, it's completely a thought experiment, and I don't know if it would reduce the kinds of things that would come across a moderator's desk or would get past the filters and make it into a public space. But I think it's something that's at least worth a try, maybe. I don't know. I guess there's part of me that hopes that if somebody had to not write an essay, but basically explain why their content should be allowed in describing their content before it goes live, as terrible as it sounds, I feel like it would be easier to read, hey, my video about beheading should be allowed to be posted because X, as opposed to actually watching a video about beheading. And I don't know, that could be completely misinformed, and I'm...
I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately the company would still have to watch the video because you could be a dirty liar.
You could be a dirty liar.
Yeah.
But would this help reduce the number of dirty liars?
So
I don't know.
So your example is interesting because you contacted Tumblr and Tumblr got back to you.
Yes.
Tumblr is not YouTube. Tumblr,
I know,
is way smaller.
It is.
And they don't have a video issue as big as YouTube. You try emailing YouTube or calling YouTube and see if they get back to you.
And that's where these 10,000 people need to come in. Like, to me, the idea of this, if you can't manage your size via scalability, then you have no business being that size. You know, if you can't properly enforce your rules and, you know, protect your creators and your viewers and do what you say you want to do, then you need to reevaluate and make some changes.
So here's where this is interesting, because the changes that they can make, they have many different options. And one of them is just to be more relaxed on what is against the content guidelines, which, and I agree, I pretty much agree with everything you said, right? And like I said before, I rather have them be more safe than sorry. I rather have my stuff flagged or taken down and then have to go through some sort of appeal process. And of course, I'm saying this as someone who doesn't make money on YouTube or Facebook. There are people whose livelihood is, you know, depends on this. So it's a little different for them. I understand those frustrations. But still, if there's an appeal process and instead of 10,000 people, you have 100,000 people, because as you established earlier, these are gigantic companies and they could afford it. They don't have to pay every engineer $200,000 and then pay these people, you know, 30 cents an hour. They can, I'm making these numbers up, right? But they may not be very wrong. And then just like hire way more people. Like you said, you can do that. Like, that's one option. Or I recently read something about, it was arguing for Pornhub as an alternative to YouTube. So like Pornhub would just like draw the line in a completely different place. And then, because honestly, it's a very similar platform. It's like people right. can upload videos and they can have a channel and they can monetize them with ads. Like, and then you just build your channel there. And I'm sure that YouTube knows the numbers that Pornhub has and is like, well, like, maybe they are a threat. Maybe, like, at some point, what if they decide, like, well, we're going to allow more and more. I mean, and, like, again, societal rules change, cultural norms change, like, things, that line is constantly moving. But imagine, like, a jump in that direction, you know? I mean, I think it could happen. And I think if Facebook and YouTube aren't careful, particularly YouTube, like, there is potential for another platform to come in and just like be law abiding, but then also be very relaxed in terms of the content rules. And the copyright stuff is always going to be a problem in the United States. And I think that they've solved that one. They solved that years ago with AI. But the other stuff, man, like that line can move in either direction, and it's, somebody's always going to be angry. You know, I don't want to have to go watch like Steven Universe on Pornhub, but like if it's the only place to watch it, then like, am I not going to go there for that? Like, I don't know. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how much better the AI gets and how many more people they put in harm's way to be able to solve these problems. Or do you just get to a point where you're like, you know what? People talk about like the dark web and like other internets, right? And things that aren't on Google. Sometimes I feel like it's inevitable that everything is just going to be completely deregulated and it's just going to be completely open because it is so hard to take control of it. Like it may be possible. What you said about like you need to, like Google needs to have YouTube be responsible. Well, it may not be worth it in the end.
I think, I mean, one of the problems is that regulation is always so much slower than innovation. So, you know, that's problematic at a larger level, which is why I think it is on these larger companies to...
Oh, and I mean, like, I'm talking about like self-regulation, right? I'm saying like YouTube could just one day say, you know what? No more content guidelines. Forget it.
So
we're not going to be searchable on Google. And then what do? Do you move the company from the United States to somewhere else and then deal with it that way? Like, I don't know. These are things that are constantly changing. And now, honestly, at this point in the conversation, I feel like Congress talking to Mike Zuckerberg, like they don't know what Facebook is.
Oh, God.
I feel like I don't know what YouTube is.
God, that was painful.
It was painful.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the ways forward is, you know, since we do live in a capitalist society, we need to speak with our wallets.
Wait. Very few people pay for YouTube. Or Facebook.
No, but
pays for these things.
No, I know, but what I'm talking about is the advertisers. You know, for example, when Breitbart was Breitbarting all over the place, there was an account, I think it was on Twitter, called Sleeping Giant. And it basically started taking screenshots of the ads for like companies like Clorox and Johnson & Johnson next to, you know, these titles about how women are inherently inferior and stupid and, you know, African Americans are inherently inferior and stupid, and sending them to these companies. And then companies started pulling their ad dollars. And you've seen that happen with television channels. You've seen it happen with websites. You've seen it happen with online news-ish things like Breitbart. And so, I mean, I think that's where the pressure comes from. And it might be one of the only levers that someone can have that isn't functioning at like a giant or federal level is to regulate this.
This is exactly where the Pornhub argument comes in, because if nobody is willing to sponsor your show anymore, except for penis enlargement or penis enhancement medication or vitamins or whatever, then you got to make a living. So then you go to Pornhub and that's everybody that's on your, those are your sponsors. But now you're making money again because no one wants to sponsor you on YouTube. And that's like a bigger problem because of the flagging. Then advertisers are like, okay, well, we're not going to advertise on Kelly's sexually inappropriate video that she posted, right? With the two dogs wrestling, right?
And then,
so like content creators, this is what they call the adpocalypse on YouTube. Content creators are furious because they're losing money because things are being flagged. This is the problem with the safer than sorry problem.
Yeah.
Because things are being flagged so often, people are making a lot less money than they used to. And it's people's livelihoods. I mean, in that context is where the Pornhub argument comes in. And it doesn't have to be Pornhub. It could be something else.
It reminds me a lot of like 4chan. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the internet is, you know, pretty law abiding, you know, more take or leave. But then there are these cesspools of the internet that are particularly, particularly bad. And so I don't think that basically shoving all the content that we find objectionable into one place is a good decision, because then it's like hyper concentrated in that area. And although most people may never find that place, I don't know the percentage of people that go to Pornhub. I've never been to Pornhub. And I'm not saying that Pornhub is equivalent to 4chan. Absolutely not. But it makes me like, I don't want people to get into those little bubbles where they just see that kind of content like they see on 4chan over and over and over again and find that to be the norm, even though the wide, wide amount of internet is not that way. So there needs to be something that a smart person, someone smarter than me, and, you know, thinks up about how do you strike this balance between free speech but protecting your users and your content editors while working within a society that rewards the flashiest, most extreme, most intense kinds of interactions in order to drive money for your company. And I don't think there's an easy answer, but I wish there was. Like, I wish I could just push a button and boop, everything would be perfect.
I think the whole internet is a cesspool, and places like Facebook and YouTube are simply trying to resist, I don't know, contamination. But I think and right now we're seeing it, at some point it's getting through, and it always will get through. It's just how much of a percentage will get through.
I will categorically deny that the entire internet is a cesspool.
So I'm looking at it as like a contaminated space, right? Like you're looking for safe spaces, you know, looking for safe spaces within it, but like stuff is always going to seep through. Like the entire internet is full of disturbing content, right? And possibly objectionable, which is like, again, very subjective, but it's all out there. Like, and YouTube and Facebook are so big that they're essentially trying to hold it back any way that they can. And wouldn't it be like a better good to just like not hire these people that have to suffer through that? Only go, like, I don't know. Like, what is, you're so large at a point that there is, I don't think there's any good answer.
Right. So I think the answer is burn it down. Just burn it down and start again.
Burn what down?
All of it.
Everything?
Burn it.
Gotcha.
All the things. Just burn it all down.
Fire. Fire is the answer.
Fire will cleanse. Yep. And or make me overall ruler of the internet, and I will rule with an iron fist. And yeah,
you couldn't do it. No one person could do it. No one entity will ever be able to. I'm almost certain, because of the cesspoolness.
I'm like contemplating. I'm like, but no. I mean, there's no way you couldn't pay me enough money to do that, or even with these. What, bringing it back to the content reviewers, like, oh, God.
It's hard.
This is such a down episode. Josue, tell me something good. Tell me something positive. Tell me that life is going to get better.
I can tell you that you can find more episodes of PsychTech at psychtechpodcast.com. You can join our Geek Therapy community Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/geektherapy. Very cool group.
Not a cesspool.
I'm trying. I added another mod this week because the truth is sometimes, I mean, it's gotten to a point where I'm like, well, that's a lot of people. I need to at least be proactive. Yeah.
I rule with an iron fist in the Geek Therapy community.
Yes.
Yes.
But I still added more moderators.
Gotta keep Kelly in check.
Yep. And you can contact us on Twitter at TechTechCast. I'm at Josue Cardona. Kelly is Kelly N. Dunlap. And thank you for listening. Please let us know what you think about all this. I'll put all of the articles in the show notes that we referenced. I think it's very, very interesting. This is something that's going to continue to change. And I'm going to be on the lookout for that documentary you mentioned, because I have not watched it. Did you watch it? Or you just heard
about
it?
No, it's not released yet.
Gotcha.
There was a motherboard review of it, and they're thinking that Netflix is going to pick it up. But I mean, this was just shown last month.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
It is forthcoming, and there's a trailer. If you want to go to YouTube, you can actually find a trailer. Just search for The Cleaners trailer.
After all this conversation, we're going to send people to YouTube? Yeah, we will. I'll probably put a link.
Because, yeah. We're cogs in the machine.
We are. It's inevitable. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. You just listened to PsychTech on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. For more about Geek Therapy and our other podcasts, visit geektherapy.com. And for extra content, including our monthly book club and other perks, consider supporting us for as little as $1 a month at our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/geektherapy.